There was indeed something wrong about Horttown, wrong in the very air, so that one might think seriously that it lay under a curse. And yet this was not a presence of any quality, but rather an absence, a weakening of all qualities, like a sickness that soon infected the spirit of any visitor. Even the warmth of the afternoon sun was sickly, too heavy a heat for March. The squares and streets bustled with activity and business, but there was neither order nor prosperity. Goods were poor, prices high, and the markets were unsafe for vendors and buyers alike, being full of thieves and roaming gangs. Not many women were on the streets, and the few there were appeared mostly in groups. It was a city without law or governance. Talking with people, Aaron and Sparrowhawk soon learned that there was, in fact, no council or mayor or lord left in Horttown. Some of those who had used to rule the city had died, and some had resigned, and some had been assassinated. Various chiefs lorded it over various quarters of the city. The harbor guardsmen ran the port and lined their pockets, and so on. There was no center left to the city. The people, for all their restless activity, seemed purposeless. Craftsmen seemed to lack the will to work well. Even the robbers robbed because it was all they knew how to do. All the brawl and brightness of a great port city was there on the surface, but all about the edges of it sat the Hazia Eaters, motionless. And under the surface, things did not seem entirely real, not even the faces, the sounds, the smells. They would fade from time to time during that long, warm afternoon while Sparrowhawk and Aaron walked the streets and talked with this person and that. They would fade quite away. The striped awnings, the dirty cobbles, the colored walls, and all the vividness of being would be gone, leaving the city a dream city, empty and dreary in the hazy sunlight. Only at the top of the town, where they went to rest a while in late afternoon, did this sickly mood of daydream break for a while. "This is not a town for luck," Sparrowhawk had said some hours ago, and now, after hours of aimless wandering and fruitless conversations with strangers, he looked tired and grim. His disguise was wearing a little thin. A certain hardness and darkness could be seen through the bluff sea trader's face. Aaron had not been able to shake off the morning's irritability. They sat down on the coarse turf of the hilltop under the leaves of a grove of pendic trees, dark-leaved and budded thickly with red buds, some open. From there they saw nothing of the city but its tile roofs, multitudinously scaling downward to the sea. The bay opened its arms wide, slate blue beneath the spring haze, reaching on to the edge of air. No lines were drawn, no boundaries. They sat gazing at that immense blue space. Aaron's mind cleared, opening out to meet and celebrate the world. When they went to drink from a little stream nearby, running clear over brown rocks from its spring in some princely garden on the hill behind them, he drank deep and doused his head right under the cold water. Then he got up and declaimed the lines from The Deed of Morrigh. "Praised are the fountains of Sheliath, the silver harp of the waters, but blessed in my name forever this stream that stanched my thirst." Sparrowhawk laughed at him, and he also laughed. He shook his head like a dog, and the bright spray flew out fine in the last gold sunlight. They had to leave the grove and go down into the streets again, and when they had made their supper at a stall that sold greasy fish cakes, night was getting heavy in the air. Darkness came fast in the narrow streets. "We'd better go, lad," said Sparrowhawk, and Aaron said, "To the boat," but knew it was not to the boat, but to the house above the river and the empty, dusty, terrible room. Hare was waiting for them in the doorway. He lighted an oil lamp to show them up the black stairs. Its tiny flame trembled continually as he held it, throwing vast, quick shadows up the walls. He had got another sack of straw for his visitors to sit on, but Aaron took his place on the bare floor by the door. The door opened outward, and to guard it, he should have sat himself down outside it. But that pitch-black hall was more than he could stand, and he wanted to keep an eye on Hare. Sparrowhawk's attention and perhaps his powers were going to be turned on what Hare had to tell him or show him. It was up to Aaron to keep alert for trickery. Hare held himself straighter and trembled less. He had cleaned his mouth and teeth. He spoke sanely enough at first, though with excitement. His eyes in the lamplight were so dark that they seemed, like the eyes of animals, to show no whites. He disputed earnestly with Sparrowhawk, urging him to eat Hazia.
"I want to take you. Take you with me. We've got to go the same way.
Before long, I'll be going, whether you're ready or not.
You must have the Hazia to follow me."
"I think I can follow you."
"Not where I'm going. This isn't spell casting."
He seemed unable to say the words wizard or wizardry.
"I know you can get to the place, you know, the wall, but it isn't there. It's a different way."
"If you go, I can follow." Hare shook his head. His handsome, ruined face was flushed. He glanced over at Aaron often, including him, though he spoke only to Sparrowhawk.
"Look, there are two kinds of men, aren't there? Our kind and the rest. The
dragons and the others.
People without power are only half alive. They don't count. They don't know what they dream. They're afraid of the dark. But the others, the lords of men, aren't afraid to go into the dark. We have strength,
so long as we know the names of things."
"But names don't matter there. That's the point. That's the point. It isn't what you do, what you know that you need. Spells are no good. You have to forget all that, to let it go. That's where eating Hazia helps.